Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay. We got 2 minutes today on DIY Housing TV, which stands for Do-It-Yourself Housing TV, here on Blog Talk Radio. We got a very special guest on. Our topic for today is going to be a paradigm shift for many of you. We have Pastor Slade, senior pastor of Meridian Village, or some of you might even say Meridian Tiny House Village. He will be on live, and he's going to be telling you how his organization organized the Tiny House Village. And that's where the ball's going, people. We're talking about on a global level. So a lot of people don't know how to do it. Some people have attempted to do it, and it didn't work out. He successfully have done it. So, you know, you got 2 minutes while we take this little interlude break right here. Get summary, take notes down, your phone or whatever, because he's going to be laying out some very valuable information.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. We had to do our little morning motivation as we do every day. All right. Today, we have a very special guest on, Pastor Roland Slade, head senior pastor of Meridian Baptist Church in El Cajon, California. And matter of fact, let me open up his mic. Let's just jump right into it. Good morning, Pastor Slade.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you. First thing, because it's 10:30 a.m. here, so it's set. Well, actually, 10:43 a.m. here, so it's 7:43 where you are. So thank you for getting up, because you're up on the West Coast, and I'm up here on the East Coast. So thank you for blessing us to come on this early in the morning where you are. And before we get into the tiny house village stuff with tiny houses, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Brother Davis, I am a native San Diegan. Lived here nearly 65 years. I'll be 65 in June. And, my family is from here. My mother came from Los Angeles. My father came from North Carolina. They met when he was in the Navy, and they settled down here. And I was initially raised in southeastern San Diego, the African-American community. We moved to La Mesa in 65 and never imagined that I would be pastoring in El Cajon. El Cajon, the further east that you move, you know, the lighter the community gets. So
right.
I never imagined that I would pastor in El Cajon. I've been in ministry since 1992. So I'm really just kind of celebrating a little over 30 years now as an ordained minister. And my father in the ministry was Dr. T.J. Winters at the Bayview Baptist Church, who introduced me to some great men along the way. and really just kind of poured into me, mentored me. One of the things he told me when I first acknowledged my call to ministry was that God was preparing me for somewhere else because Bayview had a pastor. And so it was never a competition between he and myself. It was just an opportunity for me to learn. And he's,
all right,
he's a great teacher, a great motivator.
All right. Well, now you have done in doing something that I consider very innovative, and I think is definitely needed, and has been needed for a long time in the faith communities, no matter what denomination exists out there. You're meeting a physical and practical need. And there are many things, your church and your ministries do. But the one I'm zeroing in today is what you guys have done in El Cajon with your church dealing with tiny houses. Now, just the whole thing, Meridian Village. Is it Meridian Village or Meridian Tiny House Village? What's the proper name?
It is Meridian Amicus Village. Amicus is our nonprofit partner. And
okay.
Amicus is just a twist on the word amigo, friend. And so
right.
So that is the official name of the village, and it's on the property of Meridian Baptist Church.
All right. Now, tell us, how did the idea come up, and just from the beginning, how did it get started to where it is right now, which is a reality?
Okay. Well, Amicus, as I say, is a nonprofit. They were already building these cabins, but they were building them and displaying them in the community, and they were displaying them down in the central part of San Diego. And people in East County generally don't go down to central San Diego to see anything or have anything to do with what's going on down there. So, in practical sense, we don't buy a car, or we used to not buy a car. We're just looking at it, at a picture. We actually go to the showroom and kick the tires. So there was an article about them in the paper. I read that article, then I reached out to them and said, hey, have you guys ever thought about building a model cabin in East County, San Diego, so that people could see it and could drive to it and be a lot closer? And so that was like in June of 2019. And by August, we had built a cabin on the property of the church, and it was for display purposes only. And I say display, in quotes. And I was approached with the idea of, why don't you build a village? And just it would fit in the mission and scope of the church and ministry of the church. And so if you had any problems with government, or with the neighbors, so be it, because it fits the mission of the church. And my response back was, well, what if we did it the right way? Because so many times you read about or hear about churches getting into it with their neighbors, but yet we're supposed to be good neighbors. So I said, what if we do it the right way? And they said, well, how do we do that? And I said, I don't know. I really don't know how to do that. Don't have any construction training. Don't know anything about permits or anything like that. And we were blessed that the city council, it was brought to the city council of El Cajon, and the city council said, our staff needs to research this, how it can be done. And so the staff of the city did the research, came back to the city council about 90 days later, said that there needs to be an administrative zoning permit, and, they need to go through the planning commission and the planning department and all that. And here is a list of properties in the city of El Cajon where this could be done, and Meridian was on that list. So we paid the $350 for the administrative zoning permit and, drew up plans, went to the planning commission, our planning department, and ultimately to the planning commission. Planning commission looked at our plans and said, well, you need a – they gave us a list of things that we needed to add that we had missed out on, again, not having any experience with building. And I said, okay, we'll do that. If you say these are the things that we need, we'll do that. And the question that came back to me was, what? I said, yeah, if you think that that's what we need to do to have people be safe, we'll do them. And they proceeded to say, well, let's review this list. And they started knocking things off the list. One of the planning commissioners came out to the site and looked at the model that we had. And he said, you know, you kind of blew our minds when you said, okay, because we weren't expecting that. Because that's what people say. We give people a list like this and they quit. And whatever you do, don't quit, is what he told me. I said, okay. He says, I don't know how long it's going to take you, but don't quit. And so we pressed on. And, you know, none of us knew the pandemic would come, and that threw us off really nearly 2 years. But we pressed through. With volunteer labor, we got the design through, got the application through the process with the city. Planning department got it approved. We had the inspections. One of the things that was a caveat in that is that the city of El Cajon declared a housing emergency. And because they declared that emergency, that kicked in Appendix O is what it was. Well, now it's, I think it's Appendix L, I think now it's changed, in the California Building Code, which allowed for the cabins to be built as they're designated emergency sleeping cabins, not tiny homes, because they don't have running water. They don't have a cooking source, and they are not on a permanent foundation. They're on a 12-by-12 platform that's been leveled and surveyed and leveled, and it's built on that. Then it's 96 square feet of living space, and each one of them has a 4-foot-wide porch, and they all face each other or face, you know, together, kind of facing outward, so that you can sit on your porch. You know, I remember the days of sitting on my grandmother's porch here in San Diego and being able to share with our neighbors and talk across, you know, the house or talk across your porch. So that's the design of the community. So it's a community within the community of the church. It's separated from our church parking lot by a white picket fence. And, so we went on to get it approved, and I remember – being there when the inspectors came and they're looking at it. And I remember one of the guys from the planning department, he got on the phone, he called his boss. He says, I don't know what I'm looking at because I've never seen anything like this. This isn't traditional build, but they've explained to me what they're trying to do. And I'm going to sign off on this. I'm going to approve it because I think it's something that we need in our community. And so as we continue to share the vision of what we were trying to do, we're trying to help women and particularly veteran women, if we can find them, with children who are living in homelessness, trying to give them, you know, a safe place to lay their head behind a locked, closed door, be secure, rest, because they're suffering from PTSD, being out on the street, and then have them engage in the system trying to make decisions. Because none of us make decisions, life-changing decisions, you know, when we're tired or we're weary or we're not thinking straight. So the expectation for us to take someone who's been on the street, maybe they're living in a car and they're trying to be under the radar because they don't want child protective services to come take their children away, so they're in essence hiding, and then we expect them to make some type of decision so they can get their life and their children's lives back on track. It's nearly impossible. I think we're asking way too much. So like you said, it's creative, but personally, I believe it's time for us to be creative. I take it back to me, it's a Luke 2 story, you know, when the four men brought their friend who was paralyzed to Jesus and the room was full, and they didn't stop, they backed up, and they went through the roof. And it's time for us to do that, as I think the faith community should. And so that's kind of the how we got to August of last year, of 2022, and beginning in August, we started every other Saturday with volunteer labor, building. Actually, I think we started like in June, and by September we had our ribbon cutting, and we had the first lady move into the village at the end of December. Now, here we are in April. We've had we're full at full capacity. All six cabins are occupied. Two ladies have come and have moved out into permanent housing because they came in. They had jobs. They were sleeping in their car. They rested, and in 90 days, they were able to save the money to get into an apartment, and they qualified, got into it, and they have moved out of the village.
All right, very impressive, Pastor Slade. Now, tell me what on the grounds of the village. What's the lot size of it? Is it a quarter acre, half acre, acre, 2 acres? What?
I say it's about 3/4 of an acre that we have. I didn't include, but one of the funny things is we used to call the unofficial name for that portion of our property was Tumbleweed Village, because we'd grow tumbleweeds and we'd whack them down every 3 months and throw them in a dumpster. And it was just, in our opinion, and again, coming back to myself, in my opinion, it was a dead ecosystem. And when we started building there, I really believe God showed me it was not true. I had the wrong concept because we started dealing with roaches and gophers and earwigs and ants. There was life in that village or life on that property, but my focus was too narrow. And it's become the Meridian Amicus Village.
Well, like I said, I look at you as a trendsetter in many ways, because we've been doing this particular podcast for 9 consecutive years. It'll be 10 years December 24th. And I've run across a number of churches or temples or whatever the denomination is, and they have various homeless programs, which are credible. Some, and you know, they take place in different forms. Some they feed you, they give you the word, and you know, and that's their way of helping the homeless. Others, mm-hmm. like the Salvation Army, in certain places, they might provide shelter. Now, if a person comes in right, they don't fight, they're not drunk or high. They'll let you in for two, if they have the space. They have dormitories in various parts of the globe, actually, now. But they'll let you in for 2 nights free, and then after that, you might have to pay anywhere from $7 to $15 a night rent. And then there's day labor trucks to help you. You know, if you go to work every day, you know, that's how you can pay that rent. So, mm-hmm. but I haven't come across anything like what you're doing. And I know many a pastor, imam, rabbi, so-and-so, whatever, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them hear it every week or every month. You know, my rent, I'm about to get put out. I got set out. The lights are off. The water's been shut off. And a lot of these faith-based organizations in my opinion, I'm just one person, don't have a practical solution for them to, you know, really get off their feet. I mean, get on their feet again. So that's what mm-hmm. I really like about your innovation, is that you guys have come up with a practical solution that you've actually demonstrated. And in this case, you went through the local government, which signed off on what you guys were doing, so everything's legal. Because some people have attempted to do things and got shut down by local government.
I'll tell you, not only did our local government agree and sign off on it, but when we presented the pilot project, we had presented it to run for 12 months.
Uh-huh.
And they told us we couldn't do it in 12 months. So they extended it for 3 years.
Good, good.
So
I don't know what kind of phone calls you're getting. I ran across you on YouTube, and and reached out. I said, well, you know, if I hear from him one day, great. And then when you called back, I was surprised and very happy, so I'm glad you're here now. But I imagine you're probably getting a bunch of calls because I know people right now. I'm in Florida, but we got mm-hmm. a bunch of listeners all over the place. We got boots on the ground people in Oklahoma, Texas, and a bunch of them in Chicago that I can get you in all those places. But in any event, all right, if anybody wants to speak to Pastor Slade, ask him any questions. His number is 619-768-2945 if you're in the studio. That'll put you in the studio here on Blog Talk Radio, and then you can ask them directly any questions that you might have. Hopefully you guys are taking notes. We record all these live streams, so after the podcast concludes, you can play back as much as you want on demand any parts of the world that you want to listen to. We have one caller here from area code 309. 309, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A. Good morning, Pastor Slade.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
I want to say thank you for doing what you've done, you know, saying what you said when they gave you a list, because we need to meet those needs, and you seem that they tried to give you a list that they said they give people, and people quit. And it's easy to quit, but it's not easy for us all to succeed, but you have to try to make an effort. If you don't, you'll never succeed. So
yes.
I wanted to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the encouragement. I've been blessed to do this and to have this time. Didn't imagine it. I've actually had calls. Had a gentleman call me from Houston that really shared with me. It really caused me to cry because he told me I didn't get it. He appreciated what I had said and what I was doing. And then he said, I just felt the need to call you and tell you you didn't get it. And I said, well, you know, what do you mean I didn't get it? You know, we're at this point. And he said, you know, what you're doing is creating generational change for those kids who are coming into the village with their moms. They're going to talk about, you know, when they grow up to be adults, they're going to talk about the 3 months that they stayed in a cabin on church property and were just loved. Because like you said, Brother Davis, you know, and I'm not opposed to, you know, preaching the gospel. I mean, I'm evangelical, as you know, but I believe that our role in this whole village as a church, we own the land, and the ladies and children who come and live in the village, I make it perfectly clear from the very beginning, they do not have to participate in the religious activity of the church. That is not a requirement for them to live in the village. The requirement for them to live in the village is that they have a caseworker, a case manager, someone helping them through the social service system to navigate that. And I believe that if we do our job as a church, which is to love them unconditionally, they'll want to be a part of the spiritual and religious activity of the church. And that is what has happened.
All right. Well, Chris, any other questions at this time?
Let's see. You started in 2019, and did it, how long? You said you started in June, and within that period, you had the first person move in, and how many months it was?
It took almost, I would say, about 18 months because of the pandemic really shut us down in terms of volunteers being able to come and do it, come and work, and, you know, us to be able to congregate and do the work and building them. So really, the hands-on work really began probably around February of 2022, and by August we were pretty much done, and then we had our grand opening in September. So,
okay.
And that's every other Saturday, you know, with not using professional builders, but doing, you know, volunteers. people who had heard about what we were doing, kids who had heard, families who had heard. So it's done. We had a supervising contractor, and I imagine if we were just to today say, hey, we're going to build another village, I would imagine we could build another village in easily 4 months, 3 to 4 months.
Okay. I
pass
the play.
Oh, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say.
No, Chris, go ahead.
There's a better building method and working with the volunteers that I would like to introduce to you. And
okay.
The material. And they can be built a whole lot faster. So it's ABC, 1, 2, 3. You don't even need a saw. You just put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And you screw guns. So I would like to discuss that, because if you have a volunteer base that's already went through this experience that could go and maybe grab one or two people each that haven't done the experience, we could really make a major change. So if you guys were interested in doing another village, we would love to discuss something with you. And because that's what getting our community to have unity will give an equal opportunity.
Sure.
And when you don't say they have to be, you know, they have to go to the church, they have to do this and they have to do that, they have to be trying to move forward. You know, forward thinking needs encouragement. There's too much discouragement out here that I think, you know, the world needs encouragement.
I agree.
We're only
you.
As strong as our weakest link, and I think you got a nice little chain going there, and you have a method. Now that little worksheet that you have to go 1, 2, 3, that little list they gave you, is pretty valuable to everybody listening, and very valuable to me. So yes, I think if you guys would like to do something. In a second phase, we could probably do something more grandiose. We could probably make it a little more stable, where they actually have bathrooms, they have their dignity, and it still be independent living. You know, this is the mm-hmm. key thing. And I've got world-renowned architects and stuff behind this project as well. But we also have a patented greenhouse that we grow fish, vegetables, and mushrooms. So now we can now feed the community
mm-hmm.
and excellent. Make it sustainable, because it grows the mushrooms that your restaurants, there's already a program going in Kentucky where in Louisville, they've got an aquaponic system and they grow the garden vegetables. And all of the restaurants in town buy the salads from this system, and you know, it's a youth program and everything else that works through this, but they buy the salads from this, so it brings in money.
Wow.
And they'll buy the mushrooms and they'll buy all of it. So this is a way to actually help sustain the community without
mm-hmm.
asking for donations. It's actually being a product to the community as a valuable resource, because they're giving very good nutrients to the community planting those seeds.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely would definitely like to stay in touch with you and talk about it, because I believe there is going to be a next phase in what we're doing. And I know in California, our governor just recently announced that the state government is going to buy 1,200 tiny homes, and they're going to actually deliver 150 of them to San Diego County. And then our county board of supervisors has already made a statement that they want to increase that number by 100. So we're talking about 250, because I've said, you know, we have 6 on our property, and there's probably over nearly 2,000 faith community properties in San Diego County. And even if 100 builds 6, that gives us 600. If, you know, 1,000, that gives us 6,000. And we're talking about, you know, we found over 8,000 people are living on the streets of San Diego. So we're making a dent in folks living in homelessness if we'll just pull together.
Exactly. And I've got machinery that makes 2 feet of material per second.
Wow.
So for there to be a homeless problem, it's because people don't know that there's a solution, and they are the solution just by knowing it. So we need to reach these people. You know, I like the numbers you just threw. You sound like LA when you're sitting here talking about the community, because he'll start giving you all those facts. And those facts add up. Those numbers don't lie. They don't change. They're real. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I was just asked over the weekend. They're checking for the date, but I believe it's April 22nd. I'll be in Palm Springs. There is a movement coming to actually raise $100 million in one day. And I was asked to come and be part of it so that we can implement a solution to end homelessness. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't know that's the date yet, but it is coming. It will be here in the next 20 days or so. So I'm really tentative on a schedule at this moment of what's about to happen. But my goal is to go there with a truck and trailer, fully wrapped with a story of what we're doing, but on the trailer have material to be able to stop in cities and build a couple of homes in a couple hours, and then leave a couple of homes. Because once we hit 50 cities, we're going to ignite them, and we're going to build 100 homes in one day.
Wow.
And we can do that right there in San Diego.
Pastor Slate, with the as far as marketing goes, how did the first occupants of Meridian Village, how did they become aware of what you guys were doing and how they can possibly get involved?
The first occupants came through, I had a conversation with the housing director for our Interfaith Shelter Network, which is a rotational shelter network that's operated in the wintertime in San Diego. Not that our winters are really super harsh, but we do still have, you know, people, you know, gone through some terrible rains. But he, you know, asked me about it. We talked about it. He then sent an email out to just folks in his database, and social workers called and said, you know, what do you guys need us to do? And we just asked if we could interview the ladies and explain to them, hey, here's what we're trying to do. We needed to be successful. Are you willing to be a part of this? It's a pilot project. Here, you know, we give them a tour of the cabins. As I said, they don't have restrooms. There's a restroom. There is a porta potty in the village, but then in the building adjacent to the village, just across the parking lot, they come through the picket fence. There's a building there that has restrooms in it. And in fact, a foundation just funded us. Well, they funded us a few months ago, and we're about to cut the ribbon on the showers that are actually installed in that building now, so that the women will be able to shower and kids, and the kids, you know. And then we do have a kitchen. There are 6 cabins on the property that are occupied, and then we have cabin zero, which in cabin zero is a refrigerator, microwave, toaster oven, coffee pot, and a small desk to meet with their social worker. And there's 6 containers in the freezer. There's 6 containers in the dry area for them to store. And, you know, the ladies have done a great job of forming community. They even said, you know, we need an area that could be an everyone area where we can put stuff for everyone to have. So whether it's bagels or chips, so all of that's there, and you know, it really, really blessed us to. It's been a blessing to watch it all, because you think you have it figured out to a degree, but watching people, giving people an opportunity to be in community and to support one another, and stepping back and saying, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but I'm going to help you to do it. you see them,
right.
You see just the lives, their lives change. And the kids, I mean, it's been incredible to see children who've come in, who've been, you know, living in homelessness and are kind of withdrawn, not kind of, they're withdrawn, and to see them coming out again and just blooming and blossoming and, you know, riding bikes, playing in a sandbox. We have some raised garden beds and seeing them grow. You know, I had a little girl showed me the strawberries that she's growing, and she's always wanted to be a gardener. You know, she's 8 years old and just excited about the strawberry, you know, and, you know, trying to get me to eat it, you know. And whether it's that or tomatoes, you know, I go over there and just, you know, walk across our campus from my office, and it's just like, you know, Lord, I never imagined this would be what, you know, part of my calling and part of the ministry that he's given me in the property, you know, or in at this church. I've been there nearly 20 years. Our property, we don't have to charge the lady's rent because the property is paid for. We don't have a mortgage on a church property. So, you know, in the economics of it all, they're able to, you know, get a hand up. So they can, you know, and we ask them, you know, be sure you're saving, and we really make that a point to their case managers, and then we have the beauty is we have the ladies of the church, you know, if you have a case manager that doesn't call, if we have a case manager that doesn't call back, that's probably the worst thing the case manager can do, because right. I can put five church ladies who are retired and at home have all day, every day to call. And so I can get five phone calls or 10 phone calls in a day to one person. So the worst thing, and that's why, one of the reasons why, Brother David, I called you back, because I firmly believe if you take the time to call me, I need to call you back. I need to respect you.
Yeah, man,
respect
I'm so glad you did. So glad you did. Matter of fact, we've got, now I'm not a pastor or minister or nothing like that, but we've got 4 acres here. I'll shoot you some pictures today, text you some pictures of it. And we plan on taking at least one of those acres for people that want to do things community related, you know, as far as teaching, what you guys are there actually doing, so people can get educated on the progress, process, so to speak. Then we got a bunch of, but that's 4 acres I control. If you're available to travel, let me know. We'll get you out here for that.
Okay.
We have another caller here from area code 347. Your mic is open.
Hello, everybody. This is Dal from New York. I thought of some things. I came over some things, and now they are like in a lot of car systems. Like, you know, you place your phone down and it can be charged. And I thought about this years ago. I thought about another thing, like you see how you got the red, blue, and white lights. They wanted me to come to I'm over here in New York, so they wanted me to go on Shark Tank one time. And you know, I do everything from almost A to Z, you know, think of stuff. So what I want to do, like, you know, I have like some type of create a light system that doesn't only go on a vehicle. It goes on, you could put it on the uniform, just like they have that little camera on their uniform. And so when they're running out there in the dark and stuff, they can see, you know, law enforcement's on the scene. And just like, you know, lights is all around the world on every vehicle. But what I think a good idea, like over there in Mississippi, maybe when they had that tornado at, I really don't watch the news all the time. I'm not so much into current events. Every now and then I do turn on, you know, the TV and I watch something. And I think the houses that y'all want to do would be good to, like, maybe in Mississippi, and they should make them tornado proof, you know, make the roof stronger. And then like on some vehicles, which is, it's a tornado state, I think they should have special tie downs at certain parts of the vehicles. So like if you know it's, that area is prone, you just hook it down to the ground. I think they should start developing the roads or properties so in case a tornado does happen, that material won't even fly around, whether the roof won't come off the building, the tractor trailer won't fly around, or the tractors, you know, the farming tractors. I think they should attach them on, have a special mount on a vehicle that you can just tie down to the ground in case a tornado or one of a tornado that's going to come through, you know. And but the kind of houses that, you're talking about with no bathroom and, you know, like that, I think maybe Mississippi or some of the places that, you know, right here in the U.S. and moving further, you know, in the future around the world, the devastation like that. But I guess we can talk another time, but I don't want to hold up the call, the line, because it might be some other callers calling in. As I said before, my name is Daryl. I'm from New York City.
All right, thanks for calling in, Daryl.
You're welcome, Ellie.
Nice to hear your voice. We haven't spoken in a while. Pastor Slade, now, one of the things I like, because some of the videos I watched on YouTube, is I think you mentioned your church has a, a community meal, what, every week?
Yes, every Wednesday.
Okay. Well, tell us how is that set up and the purpose of it, and, you know, I guess that's one way to get people in. To see what your church has to offer.
Sure. Again, it's been something that started long before I got to the church. But we, on Wednesday nights, a group of volunteers will cook a home-cooked meal. And we have in our fellowship hall, you know, we have a full-service kitchen, and they make the meal, and people sit at round tables. And we do we welcome them, and we really build community. We have different members of our congregation will come and sit at a table, and develop a relationship with people. And we talk about issues and try to help folks. If you can, we ask for $3 donations, but that's if you can. The thing that you have to do is get in the room. So if you can get into the door. And we have a double door that's, 8 feet wide when it's open, when both doors are open. All you have to do is come in. We just ask people to, not bring in dogs and things like that. But they come in. The food is we also do every Thursday, we do a food distribution. We partner with Feeding San Diego and the San Diego Food Bank, and we do retail rescue. We actually have volunteers that drive a truck that was donated to us, a refrigerated truck, and we go out to certain grocery stores and pick up food that, has passed its sale date, but it's still good. And so we bring that back. We have, over time, we've written grants, and so we have a refrigeration room, we have a freezer room, and we have units in there. We fill it up, and then every Thursday we serve. We actually pass out 100 boxes of groceries every Thursday. And so the food that comes in from these various grocery stores, we will take that food. If we get meat, it's already frozen, so we know that we can thaw that out, and that creates the meal for the following Wednesday. So all that we really pay for, or all the really cost that we have, is for the paper goods that we use, whether it's the placemats, cups, and stuff. You can't imagine the things that get donated. People go to a grocery store, buy a big coffee maker, or maybe a business bought a coffee maker and they decided that wasn't the one they wanted. And so they returned it after 30 days. Well, then that store will give it to us. It's perfectly good condition, doesn't have a box. So we take it, and, now we have a two-burner coffee maker so we can make coffee on Wednesday night.
Sure.
So that's, again, it's another creative solution. People are living with the high cost of food, grocery stores are blessed. We give them a receipt we weigh everything, and every year we report our poundage, or actually every month we report our poundage to either Feeding San Diego or to the San Diego Food Bank.
Okay, all right. But Pastor, now, what on ballpark figure about how much did it cost to it cost the material cost to build those cabins?
On now the cost, base. Yeah, the cost now for cabin is probably, well, it's really close to $10,000. To have it when everything's said and done. It started out, you know, before in 2019 when we were doing it, they were about $4,000 a piece. But just the cost,
right.
I mean, the pandemic just threw the cost through the roof. And as one of the other callers was talking about, I want to say it was Daryl with the that's building. All of them are done. The cabins are built with screw guns. There's no nails, no hammers. We use actually a screw gun, and we use a different headed screw. It's kind of, I won't say it's maybe like a star. It's not a Phillips or a flathead, but it's a screw. And just the cost of them, the bucket of screws, initially we were, you know, when we first started in 2019, we were probably buying that bucket for the smaller bucket for probably $3 to $4. Now it's like $24 for that same bucket.
All right. Okay. Now, Pastor, are you doing any or had any requests so far? I imagine you probably have to do workshops or retreats, instructing others that might want to follow the same path that you guys have done out there, out in El Cajon.
I did a presentation at our homelessness summit here in San Diego, or solutions for homelessness, at the end of December, and I'm also part of the continuum of care council for the regional task force for the homeless here in San Diego. So I'm in touch with lots of people through them. And, you know, whether it's a housing conference. But, yes, I have – the short answer is yes. I have been asked to do workshops or presentations, talk about what we've done, and present that. And the number one thing that I talk about and is that, as I've already shared, it's about the people. If you make it the people-centered, it's not the program. It's not how popular you're going to be. It's not how – you know, where you're going to make it look, you're going to make it look nice, yes, but it's not about all
right.
of that. It's about how you're going to treat people. And, you know, I can tell you, we haven't, as a church, we have not, it hasn't cost us, we didn't have to come out of our budget, we didn't have to go into our reserves to do this. People have bought into the vision, the money has come in. When we've needed money, it's been there. I mean, even when we had to, you know, pay for the administrative zoning permit. It's taken care of. So how's that happen? Don't know. But that's been, you know, it's truly for us and or for me as a faith community leader, it's a walk of faith. And that's what I tell every leader I talk to. And I told politicians. We had a city leaders came down from another place up in Northern California. They came down and they wanted to know, hey, how did you guys do this? And I looked at them and I said, well, you know, I see the city managers here. I see the attorney, probation, you know, health and human services. How come there's not somebody from the faith community traveling with you? And,
well, you know,
and their question was, well.
It's one stat that I throw out here quite often in the United States, just looking at this as a chessboard. There are 19,500 municipalities. That's communities that have a municipal charter in the United States. Those towns could be, they're towns, believe it or not, in the United States, they have just a population of 1 or 2 people, but they have a municipal charter. On up to New York City, that has, you know, like 8 or 9 million people. They have a municipal charter. But there also probably is just as many unincorporated towns in the United States and don't have a charter at all. But El Cajon is, man, I forgot to, because I looked up the 1,000 largest cities in the United States. El Cajon is like 67th, somewhere around there, largest city in the United States. Now, that's out of 19,500. But most towns, the larger they get, the more conservative. In my opinion, this is just L.A. speaking, that the less imagination and the less risk-taking, you know, because what you're doing could easily be done in New York City, but, you know, they like to see where it's been done somewhere else first. Even in the faith-based community, now, once again, this is L.A. speaking, okay, and my little tiny little corner of the universe, out of 8 billion people, most faith-based leaders, in my opinion, doesn't mean it's necessarily right, I don't have any statistics on this, they don't have the, I'm going to say, imagination. Yeah, I'll give a good example. The late Fred Price, Reverend K.C. Price, ever-increasing faith ministries, Crenshaw Christian Center out of L.A., I remember I was watching him before he built the Faith Dome out there in Los Angeles. But after he got it built, there were a number of pastors that I ran across that they had plans to build a church with a dome. Now, they weren't thinking about it beforehand, but after Fred Price put it on a map, you know, it became kind of fashionable or whatever. So I'm saying all that to say that what you have done, okay, because El Cajon it's about 100,000 people that live in El Cajon. Thereabouts?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it's not like one of the places where I occasionally go is Taft, Oklahoma. Taft has got less than 400 people that live in that town, but it's got a municipal charter. But it's not New York City. So El Cajon I'm looking at what you've done in El Cajon, a city that says you got other government officials and other politicians that'll take a look at what you've done already and say, hey, if they can do it, we can do it. And also see other pastors or faith-based people, imams, rabbis, whoever, you know what? If they can do it, we can do it. That's what I really enjoy, and that's why I consider you an innovator. You didn't invent anything new, but you sort of did, because I can't think of any other pastor. There might be some out there. I just don't know them, because I look at YouTube as a barometer. What's happening in real time. So that's what I really like, enjoy what you're doing. Like I said, we'd love to have you back this way to speak to some folks and whatnot. Plus, we got a base of people up in Chicago as well. If anybody has any questions, to ask Pastor Slade, 619-768-2945. Press 1, and you can speak directly to him. He's out in California. We're opposite of where we are on the East Coast, and he's been gracious enough to take the time to speak to us this morning on about Meridian Village, which is a legal, because I've watched a number of videos on YouTube where people have bought the land. They used the wrong vocabulary. Because if you use the word tiny house, the term tiny house, to most building planners or code enforcement people or whoever is in charge of signing off, if house is a regulated word. A lot of people don't know that. For instance, I have the 4 acres I'm talking about is in Hamilton County, Florida. Now, first thing is zone agricultural. The reason why I got agricultural zone land, because I can do more with agriculturally zoned land in Hamilton County than I can with residential land. residential in, which means I've got to tie into the grid. I'm a big proponent of off the grid, all right? But if I say house, in that particular part of Hamilton County, a house is defined, bare minimum, it's got to be 480 square feet. Now, in other parts of the same county, a house has got to be 1,000 or 1,500 or 1,700 square feet. But the moment you say tiny house, medium-sized house, or big house, the moment you say house, that you've regulated yourself, and that's all that, that planning department is, and that's why a lot of people get shut down. Now, Pastor Slade, now you mentioned, and I like you repeat it, because you used the word cabin, and a cabin is not a house, and then these cabins didn't have a bathroom, what do you call it, plumbing as we know it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and those things, that's what, those little distinctions that you mentioned made it legal. But the moment he would have said house, no. You got to put this in. It's got to be tied into the sewer system. So break that down again, Pastor Slade, because a lot of people really need to know that point.
Sure. Well, when what happened in here in California because of the housing shortage, there was the cities and the municipalities were given the authorization to declare a housing emergency. And when they did that, as El Cajon did, then it kicked in. Then it was Appendix O of the California Building Code, which basically made it, well, not basically, made it legal for us to build the emergency sleeping cabins. It's a designation that is separate from a tiny home. And the conditions, the three main conditions is that it's not on a permanent foundation, doesn't have running water or a cooking source. So it does. It is required, and they do have them. Our cabins have to have a heater, and they have to have electrical. So they have. There's an overhead light. There's a porch light. There's an outlet where they can plug in a computer or charge their phone. We got the newer outlets where they have a USB port, and you have two outlets to actually plug something in. And there's a wall heater with a thermometer that will. It's automatic. They can set that. And we have up on top for additional ventilation, there is a solar fan that it's powered by solar. So we made that designation, and that's why we were able to do it, to build the village, because it's a village of sleeping cabins. And if you think of it, as a bedroom in the community, because in a bedroom, you don't have running water or a cooking source. It's a bedroom. So this is essentially, that's what these are. They're freestanding bedrooms. So we have six bedrooms on the church property in this gated, secure community that are housing women with children. And you're right. I correct people all the time. They talk about our tiny homes. We don't have tiny homes. We have sleeping cabins in this, in the village.
I'm glad you, and a lot of people, Pastor Slade, they miss that point. They go in and say, look, because they bought, matter of fact, there's a couple, I saw them on YouTube, nice young couple, with a newborn, and they bought 4 acres of land somewhere in Missouri, and they had these, they wanted to set up a tiny house village. And people, it is the way, because you got to think how the city thinks, okay? You have to think how the code enforcement people, the plan, you have to use their vocabulary. You got to think that way. So they went in saying, we want to have a tiny house village. Now, everything that Pastor Slade just laid out there, okay, all right, they didn't know. And they got turned down and they gave up. And I'm glad you shared Pastor Slade at the beginning. Is whoever told you that, whatever you do, don't give up. A lot of people just give up. So what Pastor Slade just said, all right, you take his cabins, and they have YouTube videos, and I'll let him give you your social media information in a minute. But they look like tiny houses. Okay.
Yeah.
But they don't call them tiny houses. And this guy's all legal. Everything that Pastor Slade is talking about is the city of El Cajon, that government, that city government, they said it's legal. And they signed off on it, and he's got the documentation for it. So although they look like tiny houses, okay, they're emergency sleeping cabins. That's what the designation is, and that's why he's been able to do what he's done legally. So some of you out there that might be stuck with a piece of property right now, get your vocabulary right. Find out how you can take your particular situation that looks like a tiny house, and you might have to call it something different. You might have to call it an emergency sleeping cabin, or whatever they call it in your neck of the woods. You might have to call it a studio. You might have to call it a she shed. Whatever it is, and you know what? All you got to do is ask. But yes, if you don't ask, you're not going to find out anything. And the most important thing that I think that you said, Pastor Snead, is don't quit. There is a solution for you. There's an easy fix to turn things around. You just had to learn the vocabulary. But the term tiny house is a dirty word in many places. However,
yes,
you can get, like, for instance, he's got, they have a bathroom, and they have another facility on his property. And like I said, we record all these live streams, so you can play this back as many times as you want. They've got everything you need there. It's just not inside that particular emergency sleeping cabin. So for some of you right now who might have a patch of land and some city official said, okay, you know, you can't do this, that, or the other, but all you need to do is find out what you can do. Okay. All right. Well, it's really your use of the, you know, your use of the imagination. And Pastor Slade, that's why I want to bring you back east. Okay. And even if we can't get you up to Chicago, because like I say, you've got, the proof is in the pudding. You know, you've accomplished something with this. So, and we're so thankful that you're here. Once again, if you got any questions to ask Pastor Slade, 619-768-2945, press 1 and we'll get you in. I believe we got a caller here. Another caller from 347, your mic is open.
Yes, it's me, Daryl, again, calling from a different phone. I want to say something to the pastor, and then I want to say something to L.A. Pastor, what you did with the strawberries is good. Because what happens sometimes when you're in a homeless situation, people give up, right? You know, they turn to steal in, they find other ways. So you gave them a way out. Okay, I can grow food. I'm not hungry anymore. I mean, I have a job, but now I know how to grow stuff. And then, like you said, sometimes if you call somebody, it's only right that they call you back. But, you know, I feel like I came on board late. I'm 57 years old. And I'm kind of like, you know, a lot of people, they go to work every day. If they don't go to work, they're going to lose their job. If they don't pick up that phone for their husband, their wife, or their girlfriend, or boyfriend, they no longer be in that situation. But a lot of people, they have their priorities as far as, like, responding in a reasonable time. It's unreasonable. And I came on late. I'm realizing now, I feel some people don't want to be bothered. So I really don't keep on calling and getting to you, L.A. This is Churchill, and they call it the New Williamsburg. It's located on Patchen and Lafayette. It's called a Rugged Cross, and it's past – she built the building. The building is four stories, and it's on the property of the church. Before, it was an empty lot, so she got with the city, because over here in New York City, when you want to do something – they'll help you put the building up. The government over here in New York City, they will help you construct the building because, you know, we have a serious homeless problem over here in New York. Mm-hmm. So, you know, out here in Queens, it's different now. But, you know, they like the zoning, how high the building can go up, and some people are against the homeless moving in their neighborhood. But it's this pastor again. The name of her church is called Rugged Cross, and the name of her building is called Rugged Cross, like the cross, like a rugged road and a cross. Mm-hmm. So if you look that up in Brooklyn, you'll see, you know, the picture of the building and the pastor. That the pastor, she has a daughter named Rosalind, like that, you know. But anyway, I kind of like know the people. I used to work in the building, and I didn't really realize everybody who we knew each other, because when they started coming to the church, they were like, "Hey, we knew you for a long time," but I didn't know they were going to the church because I just worked in the building that they put up. But that pastor, she kept on going, and they got it done. So that's one thing I want to say to y'all, and I'm going to let y'all take the next caller.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Pastor Slade, now for people that might be interested in modeling what Meridian Baptist has done out in El Cajon, be they a part of the faith-based organization or not, step one, what do you suggest?
Step one is find out where in your community folks who are living in homelessness are being sheltered, and who are those providers, and speak to those providers. If sheltering is what you're looking at, sheltering or housing and shelters you're considering, that would be number one. Find out who they are, and then number two is find out in your local jurisdiction who are the political leaders that are innovative, that are willing to talk about it. Because here's the thing, that with the political leaders, they're looking for a win. So,
right.
So it's pretty simple. They're gonna run for re-election. They're looking for a win. They're looking for something to put on their campaign. And I'm not being facetious with that. It's just that's the reality of that profession. And if you're to really help people, if your motivation is to help people, you shouldn't really care who owns it, in terms of who owns the idea. If that political or that politician has that idea, that's fine. And or they want to stay in front of the camera that they have the idea, that's fine. The thing is you want to help people, so you do what you have to do to help people. And
right.
And find out from them. And you know, I've had multiple conversations with the elected officials, not only in El Cajon, but in the City Council San Diego, County Board of Supervisors, and they know me. They know that where I'm coming from. That my attitude or my position rather is that I want to help people. That you know, I'm not the guy that you're going to put on a platform, and you know, campaign for you, because I really don't have time for that, because I want to help people. That's what I'm on. I believe God put me on the planet to do. So those would be the first two things: who's providing housing, and then number two, who is actually doing the, who's you know got the political will and clout, because you're going to need their help. You need their help to get it through planning. I didn't tell you that one of the things that they wanted to do with us. They said, "Oh, you need to tell us what the load capacity of the roof was," and so we were stumped at that. How do you measure that? We went to the local university. University says, "Oh, we've got some grad students that will do that. It's going to cost you $15,000." And the city came back and said, "Why are you guys waiting so long? What's going on?" So, well, we're trying to figure out how to measure the load capacity, and they said, "You don't need that. We can look at it. You know, it's going to support, what are we were talking about, rain? You're not talking about snow and hail here in San Diego." And they go, you know, "No, science, who put that on there?" You know, they wanted to find out who put that on there, who made that a requirement, because they were like, "Why aren't these guys getting this done?" Because we were holding up what they viewed was going to be successful. And so they, again, another one of those boxes that they checked off. So, you know, you don't need that. You don't need this engineering study of, you know, we're not doing that on houses, so.
Right, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up because one of the reasons why, I have a house in Washington, D.C. So I had a squatter rent it about a decade ago. It took me about 3 years to get the person out. So prior to getting the person out, I was thinking, well, you know what, maybe, you know, that's why I played this the Claude Anderson piece at the beginning of this program, because politics is important. Mm-hmm. No matter what side of the table you're sitting on, you got to have some political friends. So I thought, well, okay, I can't do anything by myself. So let me get a bunch of other landlords together and property owners together and start a membership organization. We can hire a lobbyist. Long story short, that didn't work. And in D.C., you've got to have money to bankroll around the table plus, you know, and all. So I didn't have that kind of pocketbook. So when I started doing rural places, it's like one particular place where I have a house. It, you know, when I fly into town, the mayor picks me up at the airport. Now, my target areas are typically places that have 400 or less people in the city population. So, but that works for me. But it in that house that I did get in some other stuff, it basically all came through that politician, because they have the social network and the political network. You know, to give you the opportunities to get through whatever, you know, system they have, wherever it might be. So that's why I like what you brought up with what happened in El Cajon, because in a city like San Diego proper, you know, politics, it hits a whole different level. Because San Diego's got, that's one of the largest cities in the United States, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Is it in the top 10? I think San Diego, Los Angeles, and San Jose, I think they're only 10 cities in the United States that have a population of a million or more. I'm talking about in the city proper. And I think San Diego is one of those cities. But El Cajon, which has around about 100,000 people, people from small venues as well as large venues. And I think what I like about what you guys have done is El Cajon is then people that live in larger cities, politicians or developers, faith-based or not, they can look at, okay, wait a minute, let's take this blueprint that Meridian has done and, okay, this is the path that we need to follow in order to get whatever approved in Livermore, California, Seattle, Washington, or Boise, Idaho. That's why I consider what you guys have done as trend setting and whatnot. Once again, people, if you got any questions to ask Pastor Slade, 619-768-2945. Press 1, and we'll patch you directly into him because he's brought up some solutions to people. Chris, you got any questions?
Yeah, I got a few questions. I heard him talk about Appendix O. Do you know about Appendix Q?
I'm sorry, was it Q you said?
Q.
No, I didn't know about that one. I just remember O.
Okay. Well, I didn't know about Appendix Q until my building inspector, the lead residential building inspector, said something to me about it, and which it wasn't adapted to our building code here in Bloomington, Illinois. And he told me that they never would adapt it. And what it was is it was to have lower ceiling heights, have a kitchen, have a sleeping quarters above the kitchen and the bathroom. And you can build a home with a bathroom and a kitchen with 225 square feet.
Oh, okay.
So Appendix Q is another one. And I also heard you say you're a member of the COC. I'm a member of the COC as well in Peoria, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
And told them, I was like, you know, after listening to them for a year, you know, you got to listen for a year before you can even –
have a presentation to show your stuff. So you know how that goes.
Yes.
I listened, and I saw that they needed 230 transitional housing units. And I told them I was going to build them. When I was done with the presentation, the only thing that was said in the entire meeting is 52 organizations in there. Dead silence. And
mm-hmm.
the head guy of one of the big organizations says, "What are we going to do when you empty all of our shelters?"
Mm.
And his other question was, "Is who asked you to build 230 transitional housing units?" And I said, "Y'all did. Those are the amount of people that you did not help." I said, "If I had those units, we could help them. And we could help a lot more. Now we need about 400 affordable housing units as well."
Mm-hmm.
Now, they built them. I told them, because they were all intimidated by my presentation. I scared them on their paychecks. It's what disgusts me is that's what it was. They were all worried about what's going to happen if all this transitions. Well, you're going to have a strong community, and you're going to have another job. Because it's not going to be housing people because you don't know how, because you're not.
Right, right.
So I told them they didn't have to do it with me. But if they didn't do it, I was going to do it without them. You know what I mean? So I said,
mm-hmm.
y'all get the grants. Y'all do it, and you get the paychecks. They did it. And in September last year, we got a national award from HUD, and we helped more people in that community than we've ever helped in history. And that was nice. But right over in my community in Bloomington, I'm getting fined for helping homeless veterans, women, and elderly because they were either going to put them in jail or I let them put up tents on my property that it was owned by my charity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in one community, you can be doing a lot of things. The thing is you're faith-based. I found out that it was written that I have to leave my hometown because they don't have faith, but I can go and help and do for others and let them do for themselves. Because you also mentioned it was a hand up. Yeah, and it's
mm-hmm.
a hand up, not a hand out.
That's right.
You know, and that's the key. I'm tired of the handouts. And it's made it to where we've been complacent as a society on taking what they give us, like Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned some things, and we've talked about them on this thing. So if you don't know, have you ever heard of Section 3? Because
no.
people that work
yeah.
with Section 8 have no idea about Section 3.
Wow. Yeah.
And so Section 3 is something that is available to not hold society down, and it was constructed in the 60s. But they went with Section 8 because they wanted to see if they would get people to just say, all right, I can only make this much money, and I can continue to get my benefits. Well, Section 3 shows that you can grow and can move forward and still continue to get benefits. So nobody knows about Section 3, so we're wanting to educate the country and the world on that. Because, you know, there's a waiting list for Section 8, but there's no waiting list for Section 3. So, yeah, I just wanted to touch on a few key points there that I've heard you share.
I appreciate it.
As I was listening.
Pastor Slade, Pastor Slade, the ladies that live in the cabins, have some of those participated and helped building some of those cabins?
No, we didn't. We didn't know them before when we were building them.
Oh, okay. I see.
Right. So,
what are the future plans for Meridian Village?
Well, future plans, we'd like to expand and add 4 more cabins and get it up to 10. And then we'd like to build additionally villages within El Cajon and within San Diego County.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the governor and our county board of supervisors, because we have both in, you know, San Diego County is made up of 18 municipalities and the county. So we really have 19, and so there's unincorporated areas that the county administration, the county is the administrator of, and so it's a, it's easier to build in those in the unincorporated communities than it is in the different municipalities, because
that's
true. You just really go to one place. So the county, there's interest and talk of that. We've talked with a number of larger faith-based organizations. I do at least one tour a week to a group that will come and look at the village and ask, you know, how do we did it? And, you know, we show them the design. Because, again, it's about helping people, and we've got a problem in San Diego County. Our folks living in homelessness. So that's really kind of the future, and we're open to, you know, how we can help other entities, other cities, you know, move forward if that's their desire. I'm more than happy to talk about it, to share what my experience has been, and challenge them to go back to their city and make sure that they have the connections to, you know, you connect the dots. Yeah. Because we've got the, you know, in San Diego, you know, I'm blessed to be in El Cajon where there was the political will to find a creative solution. And I was just at the, our mayor of El Cajon just did a, you know, state of the city and state of the city address. And, you know, he had the logo of Amicus right there. And, you know, one of the things that people say, LA, that you know, there's folks who are against, you know, they're opposed to faith communities getting government money, and I realize mm-hmm. that. So when the city of El Cajon said we want to give $25,000 to this, I said don't give it to Meridian, because then we're all going to be down in court because someone's going to say you shouldn't be giving taxpayer money to this faith organization, or we're mm-hmm. going to have to make sure, sign an agreement that we're not going to proselytize and all that. I don't want to get tied up in that and get encumbered in that with the folks that are part of our congregation. So I suggested that they give to a nonprofit partner with. We found part of our mission statement. Our mission statement is to be a blessing in the community that we're serving. You know, we've been on our property 60 years. So Amicus was looking to help veteran women with children that were living in homelessness. So it was easy to merge our mission statement together and work together in a partnership. And so the city was able to give the money to Amicus, which is a nonprofit. It's a non-faith-based nonprofit. So they do all of the reporting to the state, and they have, and we don't cut any checks. We don't, you know, there's no, I mean, I'm on their board of directors, but I have no check signing authority. I don't handle anything. I give a report on the program at Meridian Amicus Village. That's my part. I'm just a director on the board.
I see.
So that people can be, so that one, it gives the municipality, give them comfort. They don't have to worry about what we're doing and trying to figure out, come back and look at our books or anything, or look at our checkbook, and
right.
give them comfort that they can answer people who question them about, you know, you're giving our money. No, we're not. We've given it to this nonprofit who is in partnership with that church. But
right.
it's not coming to us.
Right. Well, you guys are doing the right thing. Like, so you got a blueprint for all of this. Now, for people that like us, I checked out your sermon yesterday. For people, how can people follow you or Meridian online?
Well, they can follow us at meridianbaptist.org. So that's Meridian. Baptist, I'm sorry, it's not .org, .com, is our church website. And then they can find us on YouTube as well. They can just put in Meridian Baptist Church, El Cajon. There are several other Meridians across the United States, but we are Meridian Baptist in El Cajon. And if they want to find out more about the village, they can also go to amicus, amikas.org. And there's a video there. It talks about the cabin and actually has a drone flyover.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I've watched at least two videos myself. Whatnot. So, six, so you plan on adding four more emergency care sleeping cabins on. You guys will be like, so you meet, what, every other Saturday to build?
We did meet every other Saturday to build, and we actually now have, since we're not, when we start to build, yeah, we will definitely, we'll definitely be working every other weekend. But I will definitely, it will definitely be on our website and our church website and on the Amicus website when we get the permits to, and get all the funds raised to build the next four cabins.
Right. For your volunteers, wait a minute, Chris. For your volunteers, is there any, like, orientation that they have to take, you know, things on safety and all that before they actually are allowed to volunteer?
We do that. We do that every Saturday morning when we gather. You know, we come together at 9, and from probably 9 to 9:15, 9:20, we put them in teams, and then the team leader is an experienced volunteer who has been through our orientation, been through all the safety, and will make sure they assign them the task. But we'll do an orientation. Probably the first 30 minutes that they're there, we do an orientation with them.
Okay. About how many volunteers, ballpark, you know, on average you have?
Oh, we've had over 100 volunteers to build the village. But on a build day, we'll probably get 25 to 30.
Okay, that's a good number. That's a community.
And if we get the lumber and get everything shaped and basically the kits put together, we could actually probably put together a full cabin in a weekend.
Mm.
You know, start like on a Friday morning.
Oh,
we could be done.
Give us the dimensions of a cabin.
Oh, the cabin is 120 square feet. So the platform is 12 by 10, and then the inside living space is 96 square feet. Cabin has a 4-foot porch.
Okay. All right. Looks like a tiny house. Okay. The dimensions of a tiny house, but they're legally, at least at Meridian Village, emergency sleeping cabins.
Yeah.
All right. That's what they are there. And I guess the change, if they wanted to call it something else, then they would have to, you know, add in whatever the particular code says in that particular neck of the woods, which is in El Cajon, California. And whatnot. Chris, any other questions?
And I wanted to make an offer to you guys on some kits. So if you wanted to do four, and I can give you everything that you have, go off your dimensions of what you've got already built, and I will give you a kit that instead of you building one cabin in a weekend, you'll build all four of them in a day. And you can leave this material out, so you don't have to cover it up, you don't have to build it, you don't have to stand it up. But if you have a tour coming through every week looking at what you've got, I want to show you a 2.0 version of it.
Okay.
And this material doesn't burn, don't absorb water, stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable. Build it without a dumpster, Berlin wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home. So
Wow. All
together, the whole package, you'll be able to do easier. It'll last forever. you can take it apart and build something else with it later. So this is kind of right in the thing of not being on a permanent structure,
mm-hmm.
because these structures can be taken down. It's a big erector set. And I can offer it where you're in there, you know, at your budget, you won't go over, but I'll give you a superior product that'll get done a whole lot faster. So if you want to show your community what they can do, this would be a perfect demonstration. And if you guys wanted to just have the material and have it there, you can just stack it up. It's real easy. But, you know, have a build day. You know, I am looking to come there. And I would be honored to come and do a workshop and build these with you. And, you know, we televise it, you know, do the whole thing. That's why this show's called DIY Housing TV. But, yeah, I wanted to make that offer. I mean, you know, I'm looking to really open some eyes.
Okay. I will definitely let the rest of the Amicus board know, because they're the cabin folks. We're just the land folks. And the key the key to success for us has been, one of the keys has been staying in our lane. So,
Having that land is, having a location where you can do something. That's vitally important. I would say that's one of my primary lanes too. At first we were talking about getting 10 acres of land here in Florida as a little group project. But then when I was shown a patch of land of 4 acres that I can handle by myself, because I was thinking about, you know what, I don't want no hemming and hawing and fight tonight. I said, you know what, let me control the land. And that way, you know, that eliminates any other potential toxic stuff from popping up. So, mm-hmm. I would say that's one of my primary lanes, too, is secure the location. Because a lot of times you can do things, you know, particularly when you're talking about micro structures or tiny structures, you know, all you need is a space as big as a parking space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to do a demonstration. So we got 4 acres that we're ready to. I said we're going to take 1 acre and make it available for people that, you know, won't be charging, for people that want to, you know, do some positive things with it and whatnot. So, your website for Meridian Baptist Pastor is?
MeridianBaptist.com.
Okay, that's simple enough. And now there's a lot of Meridian Baptists out there.
Right.
But,
so that's why you have to be sure to put in El Cajon, yeah. But
right.
our website is just straight MeridianBaptist.com.
Is there, just to wrap this up, we know they have homeless out there, but in El Cajon, but are there a lot of visible homeless out there?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Yes, there is, just like there is in San Diego, there are in El Cajon. And I can, you know, if you were in El Cajon, we could get in my car and I could tell you right where they are. I could take you to, you know, 4 or 5 spots in the city where you would literally see people living.
What would you say would be, if you have to think of the two to three primary causes of homelessness, what's your speculation on that?
Economics. You know, either they don't have a job or they can't afford the rent.
Mm-hmm.
Substance abuse.
Yeah.
And then third, I'd say, is mental illness. You know,
I like the fact that you guys work with social workers. Because social, I'm not a social worker. That's definitely not my lane.
Right.
But social workers can help vet, you know, who comes your way.
Exactly. And that's, and there's some social workers, you know, that we have worked with. We're blessed to work with social workers and who have really stepped up and gone above and beyond for their clients. And, you know, so if we find a social worker that's like that and we place that lady in the village and she does well, well, definitely when there's an opening, we call that social worker back and say, you know, hey, we have another opening, because they've shown that they go above and beyond. And that's what we want to do.
Pastor Slay, I imagine if, I don't know how many churches out there in El Cajon or even San Diego County, but I'm figuring if just a percentage, not a large percentage, of other churches, and I'm not talking about mega churches, you know, I'm talking about churches that about the size of your congregation or membership, they could put, and did the same thing you guys have done. They can either dramatically reduce social services or almost totally eliminate social services in whatever community it might happen to be in. That's just my belief.
I will say amen to that. But they have to have the desire to go beyond. It takes people out of their comfort zone.
Right.
I can tell you, you know, down the road as we've done this, you know, now that we're 3 years in, there have probably been people who have gotten upset with me and maybe left our congregation and went to another church because it was just uncomfortable for them. And I bless them, I love them, but I just felt that this is what God's called me to do as the leader of this particular congregation, and I'm going to keep doing it until he calls me home or moves me on to another place.
Well, because I'm not a member of any church, but if I had to pick one, it would be yours. Because you guys walk your talk. That's what I like about it.
That's right.
Yeah, and because it, you know, a lot of, and you know it, and. Like I said, I like the innovation and the imagination of yourself. And because it, now I'm looking at, for me, every one of the causes that you named, they're all credible, and you're right. But when you ask me that question, I haven't done any surveys on this, but I would say the common denominator with a lot of people who are homeless is they don't know how to build. I mean, we're going to use what you guys use. They don't know how to build an emergency sleeping cabin. Because if you pick up that skill set, you can be self-employed and you can drop you off any part of the planet. You can drop you off in Mongolia. If you know how to source local material, you can build yourself an emergency sleeping cabin. We can drop you off in Timbuktu, Manila, Philippines, Moscow, Seattle, Washington. It doesn't matter. You know, so we'll throw that into everything you said. Because some people might have a substance abuse problem for whatever reason. Some people might have a spiritual problem. I'm not a pastor or anything like that, but I ran across a sermon last week by Charles Stanley. He was talking about focus on God and not your problems. And he used Daniel and the Lion's Den to break all that down. So I was just looking at myself because I hadn't been moving progressively forward like I think I should be. And by going over that verse, Daniel and the Lion's Den, I had been looking at my lions and hadn't been looking in the opposite way. I hadn't been looking up. So after I got that spiritual breakthrough, I said, all right, I need to stop looking at these lines. And I don't know if I saw that sermon before I called you or whatever, but I'm so glad you called. So when I'm out in El Cajon. I'm going to make a special trip out to El Cajon just to turn one of your services. Now, one last question, Pastor Clay. Are you available to travel, to speak? If so, what kind of arrangements do we need to make for that?
Yeah, I am open to doing that. I just need to know in advance so that I can make sure that, you know, my associates can cover here in El Cajon, cover at Meridian. And, yeah, I'm definitely open to that. So.
All right, great. I'll call you offline for that.
Okay.
And thank you again. Chris, any final questions from you or thoughts or comments? Or anybody in the audience, Chris, first one of you haven't called me. Okay, you're good, Chris.
Thank you, Pastor Slay. And thank you, L.A., for having this special day. And I most definitely was anticipating it.
Yeah, I was on pins and needles, Pastor Slay. I had announced it last week that we're going to have a special guest on today. But like I've done, now this is, we've done, as of this podcast today, we've done 2,301 live streams in a little bit over 9 years now. So
wow.
I've interviewed some interesting people, including Candy Lightner, who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving Mad. I would say this is the most important live stream that we've done, because it's going to change some people's lives and it's going to change some communities based on information that you shared today. So thank you so much for taking the time out, particularly California time, because you guys are 3 hours behind me, us on this end. So thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. And I look forward to being in touch with you.
All right. Talk to you soon,
you
Pastor.
Well,
Pastor, I'll call you this afternoon. All right. Talk to you. Everyone, have a good rest of the day. You can play back this podcast on demand on Blog Talk Radio as much as you want, wherever you are in the world, whatever day part. Everyone have a good rest of the day.